Moments I Wish I Could Take Back, Part 7. We moved from Sweden to the United States. I had left the U.S. when I was 22 for London mission planting, and in the following years lived mainly there, but also in Birmingham and Sydney, Australia, as well as Sweden. Well, on my 33rd birthday, we moved to Philadelphia. It was 1992. I was a 15-year-old Christian. I wouldn't call myself a young Christian, but I was far less mature than I probably thought I was. Today, I'll be sharing about some things I wish I could take back in that first decade we lived in the U.S. We were in Philadelphia for the better part of a year. If you take out travel, I guess I was there about 8 months. And there were some good times. We worked with the campus ministry. I have lots of memories of the students coming together after church for dinner. Oh, in Sweden, we had church in the late afternoon. As I recall, it was around 4 or 5 o'clock. And when we moved to Philadelphia, we persuaded the staff and the elders to move in that direction. So we moved church from the morning to 5 p.m., which was actually great if you're out of town because you get back in time for church. And for younger people who want to sleep in, it's not a hardship. And it also meant that right after church, because we had a great facility, we could have a student supper. So that there were a lot of good memories there, even though we weren't there long. However, I think I was too hard on the campus students. I remember a couple of them that, looking back now, I think I drove them away. I think they might have hung in there and done fine. But I was too narrow, black and white, just hard. And sadly, I cannot go back, but that is my thought. I didn't have a lot of empathy and patience, and the truth was I was probably very tired from that last year in Sweden, thinking we might move, then knowing we would move, and then but not being able to tell anybody, and then telling the church, but still being there for months later. That was hard, and I think I transferred some of that pain and frustration where I should not have, and I'm sorry for that. But we went back to London, actually, in the summer of 94. And then at the end of 94, we were there from Christmas until spring 1996. So even though we were officially based in the U.S., we couldn't help but go back to London. There were some great things in that period. We received tremendous support for the teaching ministry, for staff training, for coordinated midweek teaching around the greater London area. We felt trusted. We were playing a support role in Manchester and Dublin. In this time, I wrote a book or two, and we even adopted a child. These were some good years, and my wife remembered these years. She remembers them very fondly. But there's one thing that I regret, and that is how we determined the membership list. We knew when we arrived that there were a lot of people on the roll who didn't come to church anymore. There were others who came occasionally, or maybe they came on Sunday, but not to the other meetings in the week. And we tried to be very honest. If someone wasn't coming, we didn't pretend they were there. We didn't try to force them to come. We let them make the decision. This was before I had learned in the seminary. I went to a seminary, I guess it was a couple years later, and they told us about the 1-in-4 rule. And that is that you can expect that 3/4 of your members will not come on a given Sunday. But if you have 1/4 of them showing up, that's pretty good. Well, we didn't believe that at all. We always wanted to have an attendance larger than the membership because there were friends coming. But I remember one gentle brother in particular. And he wasn't coming to midweek. And maybe he was. He was quite short. Not for his country. He was from Uganda. But either I didn't notice him or I was just moving too quickly, but I decided to remove him from the membership list because I only would see him on a Sunday. We spent time together some months later. I thought I got to get to know him a bit. And so we went out to get some coffee. And he told me, how hard things have been since he'd come from Uganda, leaving his home country after so many family members were killed by the regime. And it was not easy. It was not an easy transition. It never is totally easy moving from one country to another. But I think there was a lot of sadness there. But he wasn't bitter towards me. He didn't lash out or shout. And I realized I had made a big mistake. This is a brother with a heart of gold. He's doing his very best. You know, how dare I remove him from the membership list as though I control all entries in the book of life? Well, let's move on. We came back to the U.S. in 1996, and at this time we were in Washington. I guess I didn't mention that before. You know, we were in Philadelphia for just, I guess, officially 9 months, and then we moved to Washington, and we were there about a year before we went back to London. But this is in D.C., and I want to talk about control issues, and some of you are familiar with the talks I've done at my website on control, three parts, where I share pretty openly. That was a few years ago, but I'm going to share some things I may not have shared in that series. And when we were in the D.C. area, we lived in Washington itself, that is the District of Columbia, at the beginning, and then we were in Maryland, and then we went back to London, then we were in Maryland again, and then we were in Virginia. So the better part of those years, 93 to 02, you know, we lived about a decade or so there. But I have control issues, and I want to share some of those ungodly issues, and then I'd like to share a different kind of control issue. It's almost the opposite. Well, in my view, you simply don't miss Sunday. There's really no excuse for it unless you're deathly ill. Maybe there's some exceptions, but if you're taking a vacation, and that's a voluntary thing, you shouldn't go more than 6 days because you'll miss the Sunday. And of course, if you're in another city or country, you should connect with a local church. I think that's generally pretty good advice. But who made this rule that if you're going back to see family, and this was often people who lived thousands of miles away, but that you can only be there a few days, and then you need to come back and then thus demonstrate your commitment? That's a little crazy. And the people I gave this direction to were quite gracious. And not to say that they did what I wanted them to do, glad they didn't. They simply smiled and they weren't rattled by my immaturity. But I look back now and I'm smiling a bit and I'm thinking that was crazy. You know, you're taking your family thousands of miles to visit family in this case, and this would happen every year, and they would want to go for 2 weeks because that's where they got the best deals on the flights. And I would think, no, just go for 6 days. Crazy. Control. Here's another one. We always wanted to project a victorious image. And so we didn't want people up front on Sunday who would make us look bad. Now, when I was a young Christian, the only person standing in front of church was the song leader or the preacher. Certainly, with singing, you didn't have part singers. As entertainment culture took hold of the evangelical world and all those who admired and strove to be like the megachurches, the visuals up front, and usually that meant on stage, changed. The visuals changed a lot. And I remember people saying, we should have this brother or this sister got a great voice, would do a great job. And my response, well, that person's overweight. See, if you're overweight or obese or, you know, you don't look slim, that's not the message you want to send. So, no, they can't be up in front of the church. That was my policy. Well, at the same time, this is the early 90s and the mid-90s, and I'm traveling more and more in other countries and seeing other cultures and different body shapes and realizing, oh, okay, maybe that's not fair of me. Of course, now I'm quite horrified by it. But we always wanted to project the victorious image. And I didn't realize that God needs all of us, every member of the body. And the person that you may be embarrassed by actually may be the one who connects with someone else and shows them Christ. Oh, there's another one that I really hate, a moment. And I don't remember what the issue was, but I rebuked an older man. Now, never mind, in 1 Timothy 5, it says that you shouldn't rebuke an older man. It doesn't really define what that is. But the person I was correcting was 50, and I don't know if I humiliated him or not. He was fairly gracious himself, but I was young. I mean, I was still in my 30s, and he was probably in a ministry of a few hundred people. He may have been the oldest or second oldest male there. Well, there was a woman who was over 100. I'm not counting the sisters, but the men. And he was a great guy, and he and his wife were very instrumental, really, in everything that went on in our ministry. But I rebuked him, and another brother saw me do this, and he was indignant. And I'm really glad he spoke up. That brother was right. I was wrong. Sadly, that brother died very recently. Not the older one. As far as I know, he's still going fine. And I did accept the correction, and I apologized to the older brother. So justice was served in a way, but I still wish I could have gone back and spoken respectfully at the time. You know, why the need to correct people, and then to do it without gentleness, and especially an older person. There's a reason that scripture is there in 1 Timothy 5. Okay, all right. Now, I said that some things I did were almost the opposite of control. That is, there were some areas in which I realize now that I should have taken charge more. I should have interfered, particularly when it affects the faith of others and of the young. That is, sometimes I think I was overly supportive. When our children were young, that is, living in the house, they're all in their 30s now, but way back, we did not speak critically about the church in the hearing of the kids. That was just our policy. We would make sure if we had something to say that wasn't so positive, maybe it's, what do you think of the message today? Or how about this? Or do you agree with that? We wouldn't do that in earshot of the kids. We didn't want them to be burdened with our issues. And we definitely had issues. There were things that bothered us from the late 80s and all through the 90s. And, I think that actually it could have been good to share some of those things in an appropriate and age-sensitive way with the children, especially as they were getting a little bit older. All along, we tried not to interfere in the children's ministry. Yet, in the children's ministry, many teachers were very young Christians themselves. They really didn't know the scripture. And some of them, I think, forced ideas on the kids that were really disturbing. I mean, you've got a child who's 10 years old, and someone's talking about going to hell. This is an adult who's entrusted with those kids. I think that's very questionable. And we tried not to interfere, and we tried to trust, but we probably should have. There are a couple things that happen as a result of this failure to act or to take control in a way. And one result is that I think the kids didn't realize that they could talk with us about their concerns. It surprised us years later to learn that a couple of kids actually thought that we must be in full agreement with the system because they didn't hear us speak negatively about it at home. And probably we could have had some very constructive discussions. And I think it also caused, it damaged our kids' concept of God. And when someone who's really not trained, doesn't know the scripture, is just entrusted with our children's faith, we need to be concerned with that. And I wish I had been more involved in that way. Even though we try to be very supportive of the children's ministry, I think we were overly supportive. And in a way, overly supportive of the ministry, more broadly speaking. If we were working for reform, we did it quietly, not noisily. Well, does that make sense? On the one hand, overly supportive and you know, not taking control, and yet there are also plenty of times where I took control and I said things and hurt people. I said things I never should have said, and I know sometimes that leaves scars. Many people, I think, were gracious and kind to me. May the Lord not hold it against me how I have affected people's faith and concept of Him, their concept of God. Those are the things I wanted to share about control. In the next reflection, Moments 8, we'll be in the 2000s. I'll talk about some things I never should have said publicly in different countries. I'll talk more about respect, and we were really all over the world in the year 2000. Well, actually, in 2002, we moved back to Australia. But anyway, more on that next time. Thanks for listening. I pray that some good comes from this.